GreenThinkRadio.com. This is Betty Louise, or Coach Betty, and I'm honored to bring you podcasts informing you about ways to naturally heal ourselves, our relationships, and the planet. I have an author, co-author, Rick Hansen, who wrote a book called The Buddha's Brain, Practical Neuroscience of Happiness, Love, and Wisdom. Welcome to GreenThink, Rick.
Thank you.
Well, this is a fascinating book, you crossing the science and the spiritual. How did you come up, how did you put these two things together?
Well, let's see. So I'm a neuropsychologist and also a meditation teacher, a Buddhist teacher. And for a long time, it seemed to me that whenever you want to get good at something, you know, study the people who are great at it, whether it's, you know, playing tennis better or cooking better or watching someone parent a child, you know, in a more skillful way, or talk to their mate in a more skillful way, or just has a, seems to have a better outlook on the world, you know. And then if you study what those people do, then you can start to do that yourself. So throughout history, the people that have been really the exemplars of great love, great happiness, and great wisdom, not the only ones, but definitely major league exemplars, some people call them the Olympic athletes of happiness, are the contemplatives in all traditions who've gone deeply into their own mind, trained it, and over time just awakened. As I said, fantastic happiness, love, and wisdom. What modern science is enabling us to do, which is fantastic and unprecedented because this has never happened before in human history, by neuroscientists peering into the brain, we're starting to understand the circuits of that happiness, love, and wisdom. So increasingly skillfully, we can light up those circuits ourselves. And the way the brain works is that when you light up circuits, you actually strengthen them. There's a famous saying that when neurons fire together, they wire together. So by stimulating the neural basis of happiness, love, and wisdom, you strengthen it. So one becomes increasingly centered there and feels increasingly happy, resilient, confident, and caring about other people.
Ooh, okay. That sounds like a great goal. I think we all want to go there. Let's break it down a little bit. So we stimulate these circuits. One of my questions, and let's step back here for a minute, how do you distinguish the mind and the brain?
Sure. The mind is the flow of information through the brain. So, for example, it may sound strange, but if you think about it, a radio, like right now people are going to be hearing sounds, let's say, when they listen to this program, and the meaning of the words is information. It's being carried by a physical substrate, fancy word alert, of air and sound waves moving through air. But what's important is the information that's being conveyed here. Similarly, in our bodies, we have a nervous system. Just a few facts here. The brain itself has 100 billion neurons in it. They're connected to each other in this wonderful network. And when they signal each other, that's a bit of information that moves around. The brain moves information around like the heart moves blood around. And all that information is the mind altogether. There may be a transcendental X factor that enables all that, but whatever is other than that X factor, the mind is what the brain does. In other words, if you don't have a nervous system, you don't have a mind. The amazing, wonderful thing, though, is it's a two-way street. Just as the brain makes the mind makes the brain. Because, as I said earlier, the flow of mental activity sculpts neural structure.
So it goes back and forth. The mind and the brain have these circuits flowing back and forth.
It's as if the flow of information through the air, in terms of, you know, words and meaning, was literally changing the air through the process of flowing through it.
So, okay.
In other words, it's like I think of it a little bit as when there's a rain, you know, like a spring shower, it lands on a hillside, and each individual raindrop isn't very much, but if you have a lot of them, like a lot of thoughts in one direction or another, that starts to leave trails in the hillside, which over time become little gullies, and over a long time become the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. So the point here is that, you know, at a time when the world feels pretty topsy-turvy, and so many of us feel just sort of pushed around or reactive or, whoa, it's a whirlwind inside our own heads in terms of how we feel and how we react to people and how we get hurt or fearful or irritated. it's fantastic to feel that there is now an operating manual and toolbox for your own brain. And that's the keys to the kingdom right there. Because if you can change your own brain skillfully over time, which is what my book, Buddha's Brain, was about, if you can do that over time, you can totally change your life for the better.
Mm. Yeah, so positivity. I want to talk a little bit about positivity. I've interviewed several different scientists last year who we've got evidence now. Positive emotions do good things in our bodies, and we are happier people on the planet.
Yes.
So in your book, I was reading about how our brains want to hang on to the negative events more than the positive. Why is that?
In evolution, so in biological evolution, and it's useful to appreciate how long it's been. You know, we've had a nervous system for about 600 million years, and we've had primate, monkey, essentially ancestors for about 80 million years. And early humans started making stone tools about 2.5 million years ago. They had brains only a third our size. The brain has tripled in the last 3 million years, and most of it is related, interestingly, to love, in a broadly defined. In other words, most of the expansion of the brain is related to language, cooperative planning, empathy circuits, being able to imagine the inner life of other people. Isn't that fantastic? Love has driven the evolution of the brain. The problem, though, is that during those very harsh and tough conditions, it was incredibly important to detect threats. We have a very, very threat-reactive brain, which is unfortunate because we've got a caveman brain in the 21st century armed with nuclear weapons, right? But so the point there is we've developed what's called a negativity bias, in that the brain preferentially looks for negative things, negative information, because that's how it has to stay alive. I say that the brain is like Velcro for negative experiences, but Teflon for positive ones. It has what scientists call a negativity bias. That's why in the fourth chapter of the book, I talk, for example, about taking in the good as an incredibly important regular routine practice. 30 seconds a day, let a positive fact become a positive experience. Pay attention to it for 30 seconds, and then really feel like it's sinking into you. And that focus on, as you said, positivity, focus on positive experiences, helps level the playing field. In other words, it's like the brain is tilted toward survival and passing on the genes, but it does so by being tilted against quality of life.
Today, that is so fascinating.
We want quality of life. So if we want to, if we want to just level the playing field, we have to actively tilt toward positive experiences, and then in particular, pay attention to them so they sink in. Remember, neurons that fire together wire together. The more of them that fire, the longer they fire, and the more intensely they fire, the more you're building neural structure inside your own brain. It's like lifting a little weight, You lift it once, that's good. Lift it 10 times, that's really good. Lift it 10 times, 6 times a day, now you're going to really be building some muscle.
Yeah, so it's like building the muscle of our circuits in our brain to actively focus over on positive events. And then, so the contemplative part and how that feeds into this. So you have a positive fact, you notice it, you say, okay, let me focus on that. And is that where you get into that contemplative place?
Well, being contemplative or contemplative is a broad term. A lot of people do that in a formal way. They meditate a little bit or a lot, or they do some kind of yoga, or they do prayer. More broadly, any of us that have stood outside and looked at the stars and gone, whoa, that's a contemplative moment.
That's a moment of contemplation.
If you have a child and you're holding your baby in your arms and you're just going to think the miracle, you just feel into the miracle of life, you're being contemplative right then and there. If people are interested in, deepening their own capacity to be mindful, whether it's in a business meeting or in a tricky conversation with an in-law or a friend, or if they want to be more mindful, let's say, while doing yoga or meditation or prayer, there are things they can do that are based on neuroscience these days that will actually strengthen the capacity to steady the mind and settle into a deep and peaceful place of well-being. And the later chapters of my book, I get into how you can actually do that in your own brain. But the general takeaway point here, I think, is twofold. One, that you really can change your own brain. You really can, with skillfulness, change your brain, and that means changing your life, which will benefit everybody else around you besides you. The second takeaway point is that you got to earn it. You got to do it. You know, it's kind of old-fashioned here. I've been a therapist, you know, for about 35 years one way or another, and it's made me more compassionate, but it's also made me tougher-minded in that, you know, it's we have to do the practices, right? Mm-hmm. We have this power. We have this extraordinary power, and now we can actually use it in skillful ways with modern science and books like my own, et cetera. We have this power, but it's our responsibility to use it.
Yeah, and it's so fascinating to me that it feels simple, and yet it, I guess because of the old wiring of the monkey caveman brain, it is not all that easy to make the effort to focus on the positive. So I love your tip about notice a positive fact that's happened in your life and then take 30 seconds to absorb the positiveness of it. Can you give us one more tip before I let you go here?
Oh, sure. Well, let's say you want to become more empathic, or you honestly, you wish your mother or father or partner or teenager were more empathic. Science has shown that empathy is driven by different circuits in the brain. To be tuned into the feelings of others, we draw on a part of the brain called the insula. It's kind of in the middle of the brain, and it tracks both the internal state of our own bodies and feelings, as well as the emotions of others. By paying attention to your own internal sensations, like doing a mindfulness practice where you notice your breathing, or you're just tuning into yourself, maybe doing dance or yoga, or even just walking the dog, honestly, if you just kind of focus on breathing and not thinking about anything in particular and keep coming back to the sensations of your body, you will actually be making your own insula thicker. You'll be building neural structure, having these neurons connect more with each other inside your own insula, which then makes it more capable of tuning into the emotions and state of mind of other people.
Mm.
Isn't that great?
I just love that.
It could be your customers, your salesperson, it could be the guy in the cubicle next to you that you got to figure out, or your boss, whatever. Empathy is incredibly important as a skill. And it's wonderful that by simply tuning into your own body, you can build the neural structures that enable you to be more tuned into the experience of others.
Oh, well, I just have to ask you one more thing because you said that. I have, based on my experience and a lot of the interviews that I have done over the course of this show, it feels like healing our world, becoming conscious of our planet, starts with self-love. I'm just curious how you might comment on that.
I couldn't agree more. And it's interesting that to be compassionate for others, we need to be compassionate for ourselves.
Yes.
There's a lot of research on self-compassion these days. And it was fun for me to do a little kind of a self-meditation for that, because it's actually hard for some people. So there's some neurologically clever ways to warm up the circuits so that of self-compassion or self-care, because a lot of people have a hard time getting on their own side.
I know. I know it from my own personal experience. It's just stunning to me. And so, oh boy, I've got to have you back to talk about that specifically. But I want to thank you again for sharing your wisdom, writing this book. I absolutely love what you're up to. If people want to learn more about you, where can they go?
Just go to buddhasbrain.com, and that'll take you to my personal site. You know, the book has gotten very, very good reviews. It's written for regular people to understand. Don't be put off by the Buddha and the brain. You don't have to be Buddhist to read the book, and you definitely don't have to know anything about the brain to get a lot out of the book. It really is a based in science operating manual for your own brain, with a whole bunch of tools you can use as you like in the middle of the daily life. You know, when the oatmeal starts flying, or, you know, you're stuck in traffic, or some person is hassling you that you work with, you know, you can use these methods right there in the trenches of your everyday life.
Hear, hear. That's exactly what we need. Thanks again, Rick.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Stay tuned for more from greenthinkradio.com.
That's all for now. I hope you are out there loving yourself, others, and the planet as you listen to these interviews. To hear more, check out greenthinkradio.com.